In this podcast, you may hear topics about suicide, mental health, other kinds of emotional crisis. If you find yourself being startled by this or currently experiencing something like is being talked about, especially suicide, I want to encourage you to reach out. The number 988 is a suicide crisis hotline, or you can reach out to myself also. But know that you are loved and take care.
Jesus, please don't be mad. I know that it makes you sad when I simply.
Welcome to Faith of Appalachia, hidden stories of value and personal faith. This is a podcast where we explore really at its base and core personal stories, because we live in a time where people look at Appalachia, particularly Central Appalachia, and they see us as monocultural. Everyone's the same. And actually, my experience has been that we're a place of rich diversity. So we talk to people, kind of explore their spiritual journey, ask some questions, and learn together. I want to give a special thanks to Kentucky Humanities, National Endowment for the Humanities, our grant sponsor, as we do this podcast. And today, I have a real special privilege of talking to Jessica. So Jessica, I know you and I don't really know each other very well. We rando met in some other place, and as you were sharing, I thought, here's a person I want to know better, and I would like to just to chat with. I think you probably have a really interesting story that also represents a lot of other people in their own journey, right? So Jessica, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm 39. I was born here in Letcher County. I've lived in Hemp Hill, almost all of my life.
Hemp Hill. Not a big metropolis.
It's a very small place, yes. It's a very small place. And, I was part of the OxyContin epidemic. And so that's, it took majority of my generation out. So
when you were growing up, you grew up here in Hemp Hill, right? And as a little girl, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
I don't really know, but I did have, aspirations of being something just great, I had thought about maybe being like my mom or being like my grandma. She was a librarian, and my mom done ultrasounds, I thought about just being like them,
Yeah, so you want to be like mom or grandma, women you aspire to really appreciate it. And then growing up, like religiously, what was your religious upbringing?
Okay, well, I had a babysitter, and she lived not far up the road, and there's a church right beside of us over here.
You can say literally.
And we would walk to church. She'd tag me right along with her, and she just tried to instill that in me. And my grandmother, my father's mom, was Old Regular Baptist.
Okay.
So she had never cut her hair. She never wore pants in her life, So.
So part of that Old Regular Baptist tradition, then, you say, so women can't cut their hair?
Yes.
Women can't wear pants?
Yeah.
Is there anything else about that tradition that would be kind of maybe stand out to people who aren't used to it?
To me, just those things. And my mama never went anywhere but to the doctor and to church. She was, my papa done all the grocery shopping, so she'd just home, take care of the kids, church or the doctor. It was just a necessity. So she never really got to go out and do anything. I'd say that people would, not from around here, would be like, wow.
Yeah, kind of isolated life, right?
Yeah, but she was happy, and she was a God-fearing woman,
Yeah, so real deep faith. So babysitter would take you to church, grandma's going to church, and then when you were growing up in that church, I'm assuming like Sunday school or Bible school,
yes.
And were there any parts of it that you liked or didn't like?
I liked the most of it. I did. They were really good with the kids over here. Mm-hmm. And then when I got in youth, I ended up moving to the Church of God down here at Neon. And they were so active with the youth. We were going places all the time, youth conventions and doing this and doing that. So I had a really good time, and I still go there. That's
okay.
Where I went back after I came back home. That's where I still attend church, because they just love me so much, and I can just tell, and I love them so much. You know?
And Church of God, is that where people are like pretty expressive and pretty loud in church, or is everyone very quiet?
No, they're very quiet. Our pastor's really, he just talks to us about everything, and he helps us try to understand, and he's just a really good pastor. And they know what happened to me, and they mm-hmm. know that I got swept up in life. Mm-hmm. You know, many people get swept up. A lot of people don't understand it, but it's just life.
Yeah.
You know, it happens all the time. And I got swept up in life, and they know all that, and they're so proud of me, you know. So
growing up, so you're doing the youth, you're going to conventions, just having a great time, typical kind of high school experience. And then when did the sweeping up happen?
Well, I got in high school, and I'm not trying to like point fingers or blame anybody because it was on me. I had met this guy. I got wrapped up with him. He was doing things that, you know, that I didn't do, but I ended up getting caught up in, I was easily impressible, you know, mm-hmm. so I got caught up in the things that he was doing, and the next thing I know, I was going to doctors underage, getting prescribed medicines, you know, pain medicine, and with no parental supervision.
So you're about how old at this time, roughly?
Probably about 16.
Okay, so you're 16. So some other people are like getting their license and they're like thinking about proms and all that. The beginnings of the sweeping is, you find yourself.
I was still doing those things too, uh-huh. but behind the scenes, I had a hidden life, a hidden agenda, you know.
Yeah. So like you said, going to doctors, you're starting to get pain meds. But things are like on the surface, everything is.
Everybody thought that everything was okay.
Yeah. So it continues, you and this guy, and so that went on for a while, and then
just starts escalating.
Okay.
It just kept getting worse and worse. The addiction, it doesn't grab you, most people, right at the beginning. You know, I had a good grounded place. Mm-hmm. I was in a good grounded place, so it took it a little while to take its toll on me, to get its grasp on me really well. And when it did, I was gone, you know.
Well, can you talk to me a little bit about, and I appreciate your vulnerability about this, right? So the sweeping up process, and everyone looks totally different, right?
Yeah.
It's not like all of a sudden the boogeyman comes and gets you, you know. So you're 16, 17, 18, you know, you're doing the things, you've got this dulled life. At that point, are you involved with youth group or church, or so you kind of stepped away from all?
Oh yes, there was nothing. Church, the people that loved me, the people that I loved, God, all that was the farthest thing from my mind. The only thing that I could think about was my next high, and you know, by that time I started having children.
Okay.
And you know, I ended up losing custody of them, you know, because I could not stay sober.
Mm. So in that, I'm thinking about that gap period, or the kind of period where you were like really involved with youth and you're doing the thing, and then you meet this guy, and was it kind of a hard stop with church, or was there a time when you were kind of living in both worlds?
It was a break. The church went, then my friends went. Mm. You know, the friends that I had grown up with. Then, you know, I started isolating from my family. You know, made all of his friends and all of his family my new friends and family. And then, you know, we ended up splitting up. But that addiction was still with me, you know. I didn't leave it there.
So when you guys broke up, I mean, what I'm hearing you say is you had this support base, and you slowly start etching away and kind of leaving that behind, right? And it becomes him and the addiction, and it's more intense, right? It starts feeding off each other and becoming more intense. And then when you lose that relationship, I mean, what was that like?
It was a lonely feeling because I had surrounded myself with all of his associates. So when we split up, I don't know why I didn't turn back to the people that loved me, but I didn't, and I just continued on my own path and started finding new associates that had those agendas like I did. You know?
Yeah. So at any point in this time, did you find yourself praying or reading the Bible or any kind of church, or just it was pretty much just like non-existent?
No.
Okay.
Last thing.
Yeah. So you're just out doing your thing, and then you said you had kids. And when you had kids, was that a moment where like spirituality or faith entered your mind?
No. None of that. It was just using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just, your focus is kind of, and I think this is so helpful for you to share and for us to hear, because people who aren't in active addiction really don't know how it works, right?
Yeah.
And so here you are, and it's not like you had this agenda growing up where at this moment I'm going to do this thing. It just kind of caught you, right?
It just, yeah, came out of nowhere. It feels like it kind of came out of nowhere. You don't know... where, you know, your next adversity is going to be, and it got me. And because of that, you start facing other adversities. You know, mm-hmm. you don't grow like other people do. You don't mature emotionally, you know, mentally, because you're kind of at this just blockade in your life, and you do not, you know, mature into the adult that you should be. And, you know, all the other people that you grew up with are going and doing the things, going to college, mm-hmm. you know, being a parent, getting married, and you know, so you started facing all these adversities. Then, you know, not only are you facing those adversities, but you start becoming sick within. You know, the only relationships you make are based off what you can get out of somebody. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I saw what I can get out of you so that I can go get my next high. You know, so you're running over top of people. You're no longer the daughter that your parents known. You are a monster.
Mm.
You know, you're only wanting to, you know, what you can get out of them. They become that kind of relationship with you. You know, how are you going to help me? If you can't help me, then I'm going to find the next person that's going to help me.
Yeah.
You know.
So everything is like really transactional. It's just like I'm only in relationship to get something. Yeah, I'm using you, right?
I'm using you. I'm not only using drugs, but I started using people. And that, it becomes toxic, and you start manipulating. So you become this whole different persona. You start manipulating people. It's not the little manipulations like, you know, crying or something. It's flat out lies to, you know, you're hoodooing people, you know. Mm-hmm. You're swindling whoever you can get. You're telling them whatever they want to hear. Your only based relationships are out of gain.
Wow. So, I mean, you think about it like religious ends. You know, we think about people who go to church, get saved, their lives are transformed. In this way, it works very similar, doesn't it? But you're being transformed. You become a whole different person.
I become a whole different person. And then I become a whole other person. So
yeah. So you're totally transformed. You see people very differently. It's just about use, right? Everything. You have kids. Was there ever any moment in that journey where you like hit a moment? And you're like, I can't believe I just did such and such.
No. I mean, maybe. I started dancing when I lived in Louisville. I was a stripper. And I thought, you know, I was like, God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And I would drink myself under the table just to work. You know, I was drinking a half a fit to a fit a night sometimes of alcohol just to get through it, you know. And that, I think there was moments like that, you know, I was like, dang, I never thought I'd do this. And then, you know, I managed when I was pregnant through my pregnancies to stay sober. You know, maybe I might have smoked a little weed or something. But I didn't take no hard drugs. But, you know, I have 6 children.
Okay, so you have 6 kids. Okay.
Yeah, and by the time that I was on my 5th pregnancy, all moral and ethical things went out the window. I was going to the methadone clinic, and I was shooting heroin all day and pregnant. And I had to do an adoption with that child, but that situation was probably the most, there's a story behind after I had gave birth to him, and that situation was probably the biggest situation that stands out in my mind even today, because God showed me a miracle through that.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So I'm getting high the whole time I'm pregnant. It's crazy. I'd seen other girls do it. I was judgmental of them. I was like, I would never do that when I'm pregnant. Well, like I told you earlier, all my nevers become my forever. So I had gave birth to him. I'd done an adoption. I maybe spent an hour with him in the hospital the last time I laid my eyes on him. About 2 weeks later, I was on my way to the methadone clinic. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was still dark out. It was rush hour traffic. And I was on the 264 Waterson Expressway, and my car overheated. And I pulled off to the side of the road, and I was just like, heck with it. You know, I throw my hands up. I'm like, I'm going to walk. I'm so malnourished. You know, I hadn't been taking care of myself. So I'm walking along this expressway. I'm about to pass out, you know. And I look back at the oncoming traffic, and I thought, that looks better. Walking out in front of this rush hour traffic looks better than one more moment of my life, you know.
Whoa.
And I did. I walked out in front of traffic. And I closed my eyes because I thought the car was getting ready to hit me, because I'm standing in that front lane and the car was coming at me and it doesn't hit me. And I opened my eyes and I felt the wind of the cars coming against my face. And when I opened my eyes, it was almost like them cars were going around me. And I just walked off the expressway and I just lay down on the ground because I couldn't believe what I'd just seen. And I'm still to this day like, did that happen? I mean, I know that that's what I seen.
Sure, yeah.
You know, was there an angel with me? What, you know, and now at that moment, you know, I was still kind of so far gone. But that moment, that miracle, you know, has stayed with me. And now that I'm sober, I really believe that miracle is showing me why that it let the cars go around.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, you've been living in this fog for so many years of just
Even thinking about God, not even thinking about an angel, no second thought of that miracles even exist anymore. I'm hopeless.
Yeah, and you're really not thinking of anybody, right?
Besides the disease, that monster, feed that monster, you know.
So you decide, okay, like I'm at a difficult moment. I'm just going to walk into traffic.
Yeah.
And this is not Hemp Hill where you could walk down the road for 20 minutes and not see a car, right?
No.
You're Louisville, major intersection or major, you know,
expressway,
and the cars don't hit you.
And the cars do not hit me, and I'm standing in that front lane of traffic. I mean, it was the car was not far from me when I stepped out. I mean, it just maybe 2 or 3 seconds it was going to hit me. And when it didn't hit me, I opened my eyes, you know, like, what just happened? And I see the light headlights, and it's like they're just, it's kind of like just a blur right in front of my face. Like it was crazy.
Wow. So in that moment, you have I'm going to say, and I think you'd agree, you have this divine moment where God spared your life.
Yeah, and I had no doubt at that moment that there wasn't a reason I was alive, too. And I could not. I didn't know why.
Yeah.
I was like, why spare me? You know, just to, you know, for a long time, I was like, oh, just to torture me more. That's the reason you've spared me. You just want to keep me here to torture me, you know, just my pity party or whatever I had going. And that wasn't the
reason. So from there, do things start slowly turning around?
Slowly, very slowly. It was a lot of dominoes, but things started slowly changing. And now, when I look in the mirror or think of myself or think of where I'm at, he has turned me into the miracle, too.
So tell me about that. So, you know, that was the moment that God saved your life from the oncoming traffic. But how many years ago was that?
That was in, like, 2015, so almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years ago. So you were about 29 when this happens. You're in Louisville. You're living as hard into drugs as a person can, right?
Yeah.
Had lost your kids. Your fifth one went straight to adoption. things start slowly turning around? And then kind of what did God do in this process of getting you to be a different person?
Well, that was the shock of that. And then I started getting this feeling that I wanted to come home. I didn't want to be in Louisville no more. So I'd come down here and I'd mess up and do this and that. And I ended up, and it was like in 2017, around 2017 to 2018, I got in trouble again. And
but you were back now in Letcher County. You were
well,
home.
I was here, and I had went to Breckenridge County, and I'd only been in Breckenridge County for a few weeks when I'd got in trouble. I told you about being awarded the state and all that. I had got awarded it to the state, and I was
okay. But for our listeners, they don't know this. So when did you become awarded the state?
It was probably about 2016 or the first of 2017.
After God saved your life. Right? It wasn't that moment.
So maybe like a year and a half later.
So it wasn't like you have this miracle, then you're like, oh, cool. Like, drugs are done. I'm running, 5Ks. It didn't work like that. So
no. But he didn't let it leave my mind, though. It burnt its place in my mind.
It's like,
an everyday thing. I was like, why did that happen? Did that really happen? Every day.
So you become a ward of the state.
And
what does that mean?
That means you have no rights anymore. You can't go to the doctor on your own. You can't get a prescription on your own. You can't leave the place, a county that, whatever the state decides for you to do, you have to comply, or, they consider you AWOL,
So you're like a teen almost. You have
I'm pretty much, I have no rights over myself.
And who was over you?
There was a couple of different state workers. I can't remember the name, but the one I do remember is Amy Morgan. We're still good friends to this day. Me and her are really good friends to this day. She was the one that, really pushed me to, she was in my early recovery. She was one of the first people I started looking up to as like, this is somebody that, has got my best interest at heart. This is somebody I want to be like, so.
So really, so you're putting the word of the state, social worker type persons taking, making your decisions for you.
Yeah.
You come back here, go to another county, get yourself in trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. And then from there.
I get put in jail, and I'm like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And at first I thought, I've made this decision not to do this anymore. So later on, when other people started noticing that I was different, they would be like, how did you do this? And I was like, I really don't know. And I would give that kind of answer. I don't know how I've done this. And then just one day I was sitting there and I was like, I really don't know what to say when people ask me. And I was like, God has done this. And I just knew that in my heart and in my mind and in my every being at that moment. So when somebody asked me today, how did you do this? How did you get sober? I'll say, I can't really tell you, but I can tell you that God's left me speechless. I don't know how it happened. It's a miracle. It's something unexplainable.
Yeah.
Because I knew with everything in my being, in my addiction, that I was going to die this way. I was going to die like that.
You were on the fast track to it, right? Over your 10 years of active addiction, well, more than that, but you're clearly on the path where you're doing all these things that would lead people to death. So you have this moment of a miracle that starts raising the question of at least, why did you let me live?
Yeah.
And then, again, we talked about not everything became clear in that moment. So tell me about, you're becoming more aware or more conscious of God, the church, Christian people, or whatever it is. When did you start becoming more? Because if you told us there was a long time where you weren't thinking about any of that.
I wasn't. Right? That moment when, that car didn't hit me, that's when I was like, something's there, something is watching out for me. And, it has to, an angel had to have been there. And then the dominoes, because it wasn't shortly after that, I was like, I'm done, getting high, I'm done doing this. And then, God pretty much revealing to me that, and now, I'm read my Bible every day. I read it first thing I do when I wake up in the morning. It's the last thing I do before I go to bed. I in church, unless it's like an emergency, I'm there. And, you know, I know that there's angels. I believe we're entertained angels all the time. Mm. I believe that you had put a question on there about what have I learned about people and learned about God. And I had wrote down that I believed people come in layers. Mm. That's what I've learned. And I believe that when about God, I believe that some of us will fly away one day. Mm. And we'll be shocked of who it is, you know.
So that seems like a really powerful belief for you, this idea that you've are encountering angels all the time, right?
Oh, yeah. Even when I was using in my addiction, I believed that there was people that come up to me or just came in, you know, just real short intervals in my life. And like today, like Gwen, you know, she's one of those angels, big time.
Definitely an angel for the whole area here, right? So now when you think about, you know, I know when a person, you know, I think about all the times I've been in 12-step meetings and people say, you know, I'm always an addict, I'm just not active, right? You have this mindset. Some people have this mindset, and you might push on that a little bit, right? But I'm curious about what's it like to explore faith now with maybe a more colorful past than some others. You said earlier that you go to church and no one judges you, no one thinks. Because you said that used to be a big part of your judging people.
No, I'm not saying everybody doesn't judge
you. Yeah, right, okay.
I can't say that. You know, a lot of people, a lot of church-going people do, but I will say that when I see someone who has lived a righteous life, there's nothing against living a righteous life your whole life, but someone that has lived their whole life in a righteous life, I would not trade one second with them and take back anything that's happened to me.
Okay. You just floored me. Okay, you've just floored me. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? What do you mean by that?
My past is my greatest asset. I wouldn't have the glasses. I don't have glasses on right now, but I wouldn't have the glasses that I have now. When I see someone, the amount of compassion and understanding that I have, you know, everybody's got to be something, you know. But a lot of people are quick to judge.
Yeah.
The whore or prostitute or druggie or thief or whatever. They're quick to judge. And now I have a set of eyes that's different, that I have a perspective on this world that someone that has lived the righteous path their whole life will never be able to see the world how I see it. Do you see what I'm saying? It's my greatest.
So with that, you know, if you were chatting with somebody who's really lived a life that's been kind of, you know, quote unquote faultless or flawless, right? What should a person know about the, you know, you talk about these glasses now. Do you just have this compassion? Is it a depth, right? It's not the first step of judging. It's the first step of like compassion, right? So tell me, what should they know?
The person that has. I don't think they should know anything if it's not being given to them. You know, this has been given to me for some reason, you know. You know, I think that their life is just as meaningful as mine, but they will never get to see the world that way, you know, and that could be a blessing. That could be an asset to them, you know, that they never have, but I would not trade with them. I would not trade even if I had to do it all over again.
So the past that you've shared, you know, it's given you a greater depth of compassion for people. Is there anything else you feel like it's given you?
Wisdom. And I don't believe, there's a few things I don't believe that comes from this world. Love being one of those things. And I don't think wisdom comes from this world either. And I believe that that it definitely has gave me wisdom.
Okay, so you have this wisdom now that you feel like God has given you through your experiences.
Yeah.
And the person that I'm talking with today is this put together, you know, you're trying to do something good in your community. And what does the future look like for you? What do you think?
Well, I've got my peer support finally, and I'm in college for criminal justice. So I'm hoping to graduate, get my bachelor's, and hopefully find someone that likes a good success story, because I would definitely be a success story in the criminal justice department, because I have definitely lived on both sides of the fence. So.
And is there a type of job that you really would like to have?
I would like to go into cybercrime. So that's what I'm pushing for.
That's really interesting.
And you know, maybe like a working with like probation and parole or something like that. Working with other people that are trying to manipulate like I used to manipulate, you know.
Okay, so it's really about manipulation, right?
Yeah.
And do you see yourself, you think, hey, I'm going to probably spend my days in Hemp Hill, or are you open to moving? And
I'm open to moving. I'm waiting. I have a daughter that's still in high school here, so
okay.
I'm waiting for her. She's a junior, so soon she'll be headed to college herself, so.
Guys will go off together, huh?
Maybe so. Maybe so. I probably will have to go with her because she's scared to use a microwave. So.
And now when you think about God now, you know, how would you describe who God is for you now?
The most important part of my life. When I say important, I cannot explain how important that is. I couldn't explain it to anyone if I tried. He has done something for me that I definitely could not do for myself, and his memory and his effect on my life. It's an experience you cannot share, you know, and with words.
Yeah. So now you find yourself reading the Bible in the mornings and at night. And are there any other spiritual practices that are helpful for you now?
That's probably about, I don't really do a lot of spiritual practice. I don't do take communion or do anything like that. I have an alarm I set. I know we was talking about alarms before we started this. I set an alarm for everything. I have an alarm that I set throughout the day to tell me to make sure that I'm thanking God for everything. And wherever I'm at, if that alarm goes off and I'm with somebody, I'll be like, that alarm just went off. Thank God for everything. I said, well, you better be thanking God now, you know. So
That's a really ancient Christian practice.
Really?
Yeah, so like when monks and nuns who live in monasteries in those places, oftentimes use church bells. And at that moment when the bell rings, you're supposed to either go to prayer, stand up to pray. So like you're just simply using your iPhone. You join a long history of people doing that. That's cool.
I just came to me one day. I was like, well, you set an alarm for everything else, and God's the most important, so you better set an alarm for him.
I love it. You know, and as we're wrapping up here, you said that you are a criminal justice success story. I see you as a person who has been transformed multiple times, right? And the future self, we don't even know yet what that person's going to be like, right?
Yeah.
We know the trajectory, right? You're growing into this gorgeous work of God's art, right?
Yeah.
Which you are and are continuing to grow into. But if someone's listening and maybe they have a loved one or a person that they're caring about, or maybe a person they're walking across the street who's not yet on that road of recovery, what would you say, what would you want to say to that person who maybe is not yet in recovery? What would you say?
No, you can't really speak to people. It's hard to talk to somebody like that. You know, I wouldn't know what to say to them. People said many things to me, trying to help me. But definitely give them some hope that, you know, I done this, you can do this, you know. God done this for me, God will do that for you, you know.
Yeah, really, God is your
plant a seed in them, you know.
Yeah, God is your everything beyond words. That's the thing that strikes me about your experiences. There's these mysterious pieces, right? Like, you don't know why the car didn't hit you, right? It's God's behind the scenes involvement. That's, you know, there's a story in the Bible, the book of Esther, right, where God's never mentioned in the story. It's the only book of the Bible God's name is never mentioned.
Yeah. Right?
But God is like working behind the scenes in these ironic ways.
To save her people.
To save her people. Yeah. And you are a life that has been saved. And now, so at this moment, you're going to college, you're being a mom, and are you working someplace?
I had to come down here. I stay down here. Okay. With Gwen. Gwen keeps me right here beside her. I just told her one day, I said, I'm up there. I'm lonely. I don't know if I should stay up there so much. You know, I need to do something. And she said, well, I don't know why you're not down here. So I come here.
And for our listeners, here is
the Black Sheep Bakery.
The Black Sheep Bakery?
Yep, come and visit us.
And what do you guys do at the bakery?
We bake all kinds of danishes and sweet things and cream horns and cakes and specialty things that's asked for. And then we got the brick oven. You know, we have the brick oven making brick oven pizzas. I think they're unmatched. And we have the best breakfast Saturday morning.
Oh, wow.
The best breakfast that every Saturday morning at 9:30.
Okay. So at 9, so you help.
And it's unmatched.
So you help with these community projects now.
Oh, yeah. And if there's projects that go on here, if there's events that go on here, I come down here and I help with them. A lot of times I volunteer and just because I believe that I'm wanting our relationships out of some people that I don't have something to gain from.
That blows my mind, right? The transition. And you talked about having transactional kind of, you use people.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, you're just freely trying to give yourself to other people just for their benefit, right? It's not for your gain anymore, it's for their gain. That truly is
the experience, so it's that, you know, sometimes the experience is worth more than anything, that any type of, you know, payment, just the experience.
So that in 10 or 15 more years, you can look back and say, I wouldn't trade that for anything, right?
Yeah. I can look back right now and say that. Definitely, if I'm here in 15 years and haven't went to be with God, I definitely will be saying, you know, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Mm. Well, I really appreciate your time and being able to share with us a little bit. Anything else you want to add? I know you took some notes earlier. I want to make sure.
Pull it out here and look. Let's see. Was there anything? Oh, that I was just so glad for this opportunity.
Yeah, okay.
That was it. I'm so glad and so thankful you guys came.
No reminder on your phone to be that thankful, right?
I've set three alarms to remind myself this morning you guys were coming. That's how forgetful I get sometimes.
Well.
But I'm so grateful. Yeah, I'll be thanking God for centuries to come.
I appreciate you very much, and thanks for living your life out here in the community of a place that oftentimes can be forgotten, and you're trying to plug in and make something, a Black Sheep Bakery and the brick oven and the best food in Hemp Hill.
Yes, well, the breakfast is the best in all the world.
I love it.
I've had a mini country breakfast.
I'm going to have to put that on my radar on a Saturday morning and get out here. So,
all right, 9:30.
9:30, okay. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
When I simply don't know.